Hello and welcome to Bootstrapped, the podcast for software bootstrappers. If you are running a software company or looking to start one, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Steve McLeod. The following message is brought to you by Balsamiq. Balsamiq have decided to support the Bootstrapped community by donating their sponsored airtime to some of our listeners. Have you ever looked for a professional yet simple tool to organize your ideas and plans? A tool which would let you make a brain dump of your vision as a hierarchical list and later turn this list into tasks, notes, and milestones? Meet Checklist, a professional list-making tool with great flexibility and performance. With Checklist, you can plan a project release, split complex features into doable chunks, share tasks with your team, get notifications about due dates, and much, much more. Best of all, it's extremely fast and focused because you can control everything from the keyboard. Open checklist.com and try it out. There's a free version. That's checklist.com. If you'd like to have your startup advertised on this podcast for free, courtesy of Balsamiq, or receive a promo code for Balsamiq, visit balsamiq.com/go/bootstrapped. There are only two advertising spots left, so act fast. Joining me again today is Ed Freifogel. Ed's my co-host for a few weeks. Hey, Ed, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. We're in the final run into Christmas, so 1 week left basically of work, cranking a few things out, but already kind of starting to slip into holiday mode. So how about you?
Yeah, the same, trying to put off doing any of those releases that really should wait until after the holiday period.
We're trying to crank to get a few things out, but you know, before that, to be honest, for us, it doesn't really make that much difference. It's not like our usage is pretty constant the whole time. It's not like there are peaks and troughs. So, and even over Christmas, the usage is still pretty high based on past years. So I guess for you, probably usage goes way down whenever there are holidays.
Yeah. Our usage is Monday to Friday mostly, and it really drops during holidays, depending on which country, but everybody in the world just about takes Christmas off, even countries where they're not traditional Christian countries, I've discovered.
Yeah, that's just globalization, I guess. Once a significant number of countries are on holiday, it makes sense to also do your holiday at that time. It's like here in Spain with the August holidays. If everyone goes on holiday, then you might as well go on holiday. So then it becomes self-reinforcing. You
know? Exactly. So Ed, what have you been working on this week?
What have we been working on? You know, last week we talked about our kind of habits that we do to be effective. Last week we had speed day. This week we had security day. So we kind of reviewed security best practices, made sure we're staying on top of that. I have some things related to that should hopefully launch later today. And basically trying to more educational content for our users about how they can use our product securely, specifically, you know, make sure we give people an API key. So make sure they don't, you know, publish the API key in a GitHub repository or things like that.
Do you just tell them that in your docs, or do you send them out warning emails or
no? We
like
just
that?
Tell them. We just tell them that in our docs. That's an interesting idea. I guess we could scan GitHub because I do sometimes do it manually, and I see people have their keys there. But it's more about like, you know, what are the best practices? How can they delete their key, get a new key, things like that. So just some kind of educational content around that. So.
Oh, that's interesting. You're making me think that it's a bit of a gap in how we do things, although we don't really have API keys. We do have an API key, but it's only used by Zapier, and I'm not sure if people shouldn't be publishing them anyway, right? Regardless, even if I can't think of a security flaw.
They shouldn't, but they do. So, you know, I think this topic of security, privacy, all these kinds of issues are coming more and more to the fore. I think it's kind of a chance to differentiate our service a little bit. So, and it's one of the reasons that what our big competitor is, particularly on the privacy issue, our big competitor is Google. And one of the big reasons that people don't want to work with Google is they don't want to share their data with Google. They don't want to And so we position ourselves much more as we don't track you, we don't use your data for anything. We're just doing the geocoding and giving you, you know, the answers you want. And we're privacy focused, we're of course security focused. So on the one hand, it's the right thing to do in general, but it's also useful kind of for brand building. So
I like it. Do you sometimes get people try to hack your system and then report to you that they think they found a gap?
Yes, we do occasionally. And we have paid bounties actually to people who have found things in the past. Usually it's very like minor things. We've never had any kind of major problem. Usually it's just around kind of best practices around very like obscure edge cases. So, but you know, there are a lot of guys, we've been contacted by several people who, it's guys usually in like, let's say developing world countries who I guess try to make their living just by like crawling different sites and then pinging them and being like, hey, will you pay me for this bug I found? You can tell in many cases, they're just running kind of standard software. They're not really doing a deeper one-on-one analysis, but that can still be useful. So, and like I said, we have actually paid some people for different little things that they found.
Yeah, so it's good. We're all like vulnerable to security flaws. And I think as a bootstrapper, you just have to accept that you will have vulnerabilities and you need a process to deal with them. And when you discover them, you don't act like it's the end of the world. You just fix it.
That's true. I mean, I guess in our case, you know, we're not, my service gives away open data. So, I mean, like, you know, we're not a bank, we're not a financial institution. All the payment details and things are with Stripe, the payment processor. We don't have any of that. Nevertheless, of course, you know, people's emails, addresses are private and things like that. So, of course, we want to do a good job. But I think you also need to keep the perspective that, you know, we're not, you know, this isn't a major financial institution or anything. So,
yeah, interesting.
So, what about you? What have you been up to?
So, we've decided that we need to finally add self-service canceling. In feature upvote, I never actually got around to coding the self-service canceling. So if somebody's had enough of us, they don't want to use us anymore, they send us an email and I go through a manual process of canceling them. It should have been automated long ago. But in preparation for doing that, I realized that we needed to have some better information on our dashboard to be able to see when this stuff is happening, which meant I had to sit back and think about how our internal admin dashboard is. And I can describe it in one word. It's dismal. This is the part of the app that nobody sees, only our internal team. So I've been trying to get some order into that. It's just not the return on investment that you get by polishing it that you do get when you polish the public part of your application.
Yeah, I guess it's employee productivity, right? And both in terms of like the ongoing usage, but also onboarding new employees if your tools are more intuitive. And yeah, it's always something you got to trade off.
I'm able to take a new employee and hold their hand as they get used to it, right? They don't have to do this remotely. There's no like worry about how customers will churn. Well, that's type of concern because the new employee will stick through it, we hope. And we're not using it for a lot. It's maybe extending trials, like I said, canceling accounts or checking up on accounts to find out how they're using it. So every time I have to use that internal dashboard, I do cringe a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's probably worth setting aside a day or two or whatever to just say, all right, today's the day I'm going to, you know, clean up solve the obvious problems.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe a good project to do over Christmas or like a downtime. But the core issue of self-service cancellations, that's a topic probably for an episode in and of itself. I know there's a lot of discussion about that, is that should you make it as simple as, I mean, clearly you should let people cancel. The question is, do you make it as simple as possible or do you make it a little more complex, not in to try to prevent them from canceling, but as a way to capture information from them as they're on the way out,
right?
You know, and try to understand better why are they canceling, you know, and what led them to this point. You know, because there's nothing more frustrating than someone cancels and you don't get any feedback at all as to like, was it something about your product? Was it just they don't need it anymore? Was it, you know, you have no idea. Was it that they're going out of business? You know, who knows? Who knows? Right.
But that's a good point. Then our current system of them writing to us, and it's always me who answers them. We do, in most cases, actually find out why they want to cancel, or at least they tell us. I assume they're being honest, and it's almost always that they no longer need the product. The typical response is, I like your product, but we just don't have a need for it anymore.
Exactly. And say, you know, people always, a key metric you should be tracking is your churn number. But I think it's very important to break out voluntary churn and involuntary churn. Yeah. Involuntary churn is they're going out of business or for whatever reason, they don't need your product anymore, right? And then there's nothing you can really do. Whereas voluntary churn is they're unhappy with your product or they've switching to a competitor or whatever. And that's, of course, where you need to be very aware and you can do something. So by just lumping those into one number, I think it's very easy to get confused and jump to the wrong conclusions.
Oh, that's a really good point. And there's some level of churn you just can't avoid then with this involuntary churn.
Right.
If someone's going out of business, what can you do? There's nothing you can do to stop that. So this you just have to accept maybe there's a baseline, depending on the industry, of maybe 2 or 3% churn. It just can't be reduced.
Exactly. Okay. Mm. We should probably explore that in another episode because we also, over the last year, introduced, you know, tried to make it easier for people to cancel. And it definitely has pros and cons. So
This maybe the next week.
Maybe next week. Maybe next week.
Moving on to today's topic. Today is part two of last week's episode. Last week, Ed told us his top five habits for small teams. Ed, do you want to recap what they were?
Oh, my habits were, number one was have an advisor list that you have to publish regular updates to force yourself to document kind of what you're doing. Let me bring up my list again. Yeah, the advisor list, schedule time for the regular thing. So as I said, this week we did security day. Maybe you need an internal tools day, Steve, where once a quarter you fix your internal tools. Use a metric service like Baremetrics or ChartMogul or something like that. Don't try to do that yourself. The fourth was to hire freelancers as a way to, the same way you would hire a trainer at a gym, kind of to force yourself to document your stuff and to get your systems in order so that an external person can work on it and to force yourself to be more disciplined. And then the final point was you should set goals for yourself, but also celebrate when you achieve them, even no matter how can be big celebrations or smaller ones, but you should make sure that you're taking the time, you know, to record your progress and enjoy it. So speaking of which, we had a nice dinner last night.
We did, the two of us with a couple of other people.
Exactly.
The Barcelona connection again. Oops, I mentioned Barcelona.
Yes.
Yeah, that was just celebrating that we got to the end of the year and we all running successful businesses.
Exactly. We all have running successful businesses. We're all small businesses or in some cases single person businesses are working remotely. And it's easy to, you know, the to-do list is really long. So it's important to take the time to say, oh, let me catch my breath there a bit and celebrate and, you know, record how far I've come. So, but let's dive into your top five habits. So what do you got?
So a bit of a preamble. I had trouble putting this list together. I was ransacking my mind thinking, what are the habits that not just I do personally, but our small team of five people do? And in the end, I had to ask my girlfriend, like, I'm struggling to put this list together. And this was really helpful. She told me some of the habits we do. And then I realized, yeah, we do that. So starting at the top, number one is that I try to turn up almost every day at the same time. My team know that I'm available from about this time to that time. That encourages them to be available at the same time. And that regularity just helps keep everything moving with a good cadence.
Yeah, I think that's really quite important as you have a team. I mean, I know people are very into kind of the asynchronous communication and that people can work from anywhere at any time. But there is definitely a value to having kind of a set pattern and people know, okay, you know, at this time of day, you know, I can ping Steve with my question or whatever.
Exactly.
This is one of the big benefits of parenthood. One of the big benefits yeah. of parenthood is that you're forced to be on the schedule. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You work in those moments you know you can at a very set time. A few years ago, my girlfriend and I did a 7-month trip around the world, and we were both working while we were doing this, partly on our business, and partly she was doing something else for another customer. And it wasn't good. The trip was good, but the work, it really suffered. The business suffered. And I think that's because there was no predictable time when we'd be able to do tasks, always trying to find the right workspace or trying to recover from some, you know, grueling bus trip. And at the time, I had a couple of freelancers working just on a sporadic basis. And I don't think it was very fair on them either, that they never knew what time zone I'd be or where I'd be. And I enjoyed it and I don't regret doing it, but the business is definitely better. Now there's this like concept of turning up every day at the same time.
Well, I think especially for SaaS businesses where it's not, you know, there's no one single silver bullet. It's about slow, steady progress, building. I'm a big fan of, do you know the expression, slow is steady, steady is fast?
And I don't know it, but I do now.
Okay, so the idea is that by doing steady work, but on a consistent schedule and not rushing yourself, not forcing it, but doing steady work, that you know, then when you look back, you know after 3 months or whatever, you're like, you've actually come quite a long way, right?
Okay.
And many people, instead of thinking, oh, okay, I gotta get this project, let me crank, and it doesn't, you know, you can do that in the very short term, but it's not sustainable. And particularly that's a bad match with the dynamics of SaaS, I think, of a SaaS business.
So. Well, that's just forced me to reorder my team habits, because what you mentioned is one that I had in position 4 and I've just moved it up to position 2, set a realistic cadence and stick to it.
Okay.
So for example, so cadence is this concept from cycling. You, no matter what gear you're in, you always try to rotate the pedals at a set rate, and that's your cadence. If you need to go up a hill, you still keep pedaling at the same speed, but you change the gear. And that I find in business is a really great way to think. Maybe it's like every month we'll get one blog post out. It's a realistic cadence that we can do, but then you make sure you get it done. Every month we're going to release one new feature, one improvement. Every month we're going to spend time to improve the docs or something. And that has been really helpful. I didn't think of it how you described it, that you can look back in the past and see how much you've come by doing these things every day.
I completely agree. I really think maybe it's different in other lines of businesses, or maybe where you have very seasonal fluctuations or whatever, then you have to crank at certain times of the year. But for a SaaS business, I think it's the most important thing is just steady progress. So yeah.
B2B especially. I guess those consumer-based businesses have to deal with Black Friday type of mentality, but that fortunately doesn't affect us. So number 3 on my list. This one I learned from Robert Brandel, who was on the podcast in episode 107, and that's to share metrics and other achievements with the team. This one, I had trouble coming to grips with this. I figured, like, this is stuff people didn't know about, need to know about. They could do their work improving the product and doing our marketing, but ultimately it's for me as the business owner to worry about the metrics. But Robert convinced me that sharing these, including revenue, gives everybody this sense of a common goal and a feeling of achievement. It's nice to see how this new feature may have impacted on our improving the number of people converting from trial to paid, for example. So now every month when we have our team meeting, we start off, well, early on, we go through the metrics. We talk about monthly recurring revenue and how that's gone up or down. It's only gone up so far, about how our organic traffic's gone up and about how our churn is doing and so on. And that's really interesting. I've noticed that when somebody misses the meeting, for they're away or they're sick or whatever, when they come back, the first thing they ask me is, so what was the MRR this month? You know, they're really interested in knowing these things.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about this one, frankly. I think it depends on the team and the maturity of the team, maybe to a degree also on the product. Is it truly, are you able to encapsulate your business in a few key numbers? I guess with SaaS, you probably are, with something like MRR or, you know, churn and things like this. I have had my own experiences. I like the way you do it, where you, once a month, you share the numbers and you're able to put them in context. What I wouldn't do is just give everyone full access to all the, you know, the bare metrics or and everything. Not because I'm secretive, but I have had experiences in the past, for example, with my team at my prior company, which was kind of a bigger team, and we had many junior employees whose their first work experience. And I think you should always communicate certainty, not communicate uncertainty.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
some people, particularly, you know, maybe it's just their personality or their seniority, do really bad at uncertainty, right?
Mm.
And I think it's also wrong to expect a junior employee to grapple, to be comfortable with the same level of uncertainty that you have to grapple with as a founder. I mean, your role as the founder is, you accept this uncertainty, you try to manage the uncertainty, and to a degree, you shield the team from the uncertainty, right? And you just tell them, all right, there are a lot of things happening. Here's the number we're going to focus on. Make that number go up. And once a month, we'll check in and I'll give you an update. And I think that's the right way to do it. Not what you don't want is that every day everyone's checking the number and be like, you know, why did two people turn yesterday or whatever? You know, that's a nightmare. That's a nightmare.
So there's two things I'd say to that. One is, I agree that perhaps the certainty is important. And if our MRR was dropping, then perhaps that's not such a smart idea. It's easy to do when numbers are going up. But the second thing is...
The problem is now you've set the tradition of you communicate it every month, right? So even if the number goes down, you're still going to have to communicate it. Because otherwise, that's exactly it. If you don't communicate it, then people are going to say, like, holy shit, the month must have been terrible.
Yeah.
You know? And they're going to assume
is my
the
job
worst.
Threatened? Yeah.
Exactly.
And the second thing I'd say about what you said is I don't share a profit and loss. So revenue I'm sharing, but not the bigger picture. That is definitely just for me to worry about. And it wouldn't be fair to expect anybody else to have to worry about that or understand that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
When we are sharing the metrics, it's a set format. We compare the previous months to the month before. So we have the meeting, for example, at the beginning of December. We'll look at November's numbers. We'll compare them to October, and we'll compare them to 1 year ago. And I only recently started doing that 1 year ago comparison because I think that helps protect people from being affected by the fluctuation that can happen month to month.
I think that's a good idea. That's a very good idea. Also, in terms of helping people maybe create more of a long-term outlook, you know, and not...
Yeah.
What you don't want is people trying to do crazy things to bump the number up, you know, just at the next monthly meeting, even if it's... You know, there can be things you can, you know, like you could cut all marketing or whatever. And as a result, you know, expenses go down. But of course, it might be the wrong thing in the long term. So
might be, definitely would be.
Yeah. So I think that's a good way to do it, the way you've described. I do agree with your fundamental premise, though, of, you know, if you have talented knowledge workers, which is what we all have on an online SaaS business, you want. You know, people are motivated by seeing the journey that they're on and feeling like they're a part of it and being able to have some measurable parameters around that they can see that they're influencing. So
that's three. Number one was I turn up almost every day at the same time. Number two was I set a realistic cadence and I stick to it. Number three was sharing metrics with the team. Number four, this kind of is related to one of yours from last week, Ed. We have a really easy way to document processes. And we're always adding and editing it.
How
if someone
do that,
comes to me and says, can you give me some feedback on how I should do this? My response will be like, here it is. Can you put that into I'll put it into the document process system myself.
What tool do you use there? Just text files or Google Docs?
Good question. We used Confluence for a while. Then we moved to Google Docs, but now we're using Notion.
All right. Okay.
Notion I really like.
I've never used it. I mean, first of all, my team right now, you know, we're kind of two people who are in the core team. So this is one of the things we probably need to get better at next year is kind of documenting many of the things that we just do ourselves. Have you ever looked at this tool Process Kit? I've seen several people mention it. This is designed specifically for this use case of you document processes to make it easy to share them, be it with your team internally, be it with external contractors, freelancers, whatever. Are you
familiar? I haven't looked at it. I think I've seen it come up on Twitter a few times. Is that is it Brian Castle? Is that the name of the guy behind it?
Could be. I've seen people discuss it, and I've looked at the landing pages. I've never actually been in the product. So, but this is
what I like about Notion.
I think this is a great habit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the means of doing it is not so important as actually doing it. And I find you just don't want friction. If there's friction, people stop keeping the processes up to date. And this is why I like Notion. It's a web app. It's also a standalone Electron app, I think. And it's just any document, you just click on it and start typing. You don't have to go into edit mode or anything. It keeps a full revision history and so on. I mean, Google Docs is also does something similar, although it's just a single page concept.
Yeah, I don't know. Google Docs, you know, it's. I think there is some value in having a tool specifically for this use case. Like Google Docs, you know, the revision history isn't there. It's not as good.
Mm-hmm. But better than nothing. But I wouldn't stick for it for too long. We stuck for it for a while, but I think Notion has been a game changer for this type of thing. Highly recommended for anyone listening. Notion, it's kind of a general content I don't even know how to describe it. Check it out. We use it for more than just documenting processes. We also use it for gathering like other ideas and concepts and practices. And
can I ask one question on this? So again, based on my experience at my former company where we had about 20 employees and we had new people mm-hmm. coming all the time and people leaving the business and you know, one of the challenges is, of course, you start off with the best of intentions, like, okay, let's document how mm-hmm. we do things, right? And then mm-hmm. people have different styles, different ways of organizing the information, and then people come, new people come, people go, and it very quickly gets unruly, right? Do you regularly, yeah. like, clean it up, or how do you...
No, I understand the problem, and in fact, we had that problem with Confluence. You know, we do have one person who I would say she's like leading advocate for Notion and does a pretty good job, a really good job of keeping that order there. But I can see this happening in the long term. Yeah, in the end, you start needing to have a process that describes how to use your process management tool.
Yeah,
I don't have an answer for that one, but I understand the problem and I have encountered it in the corporate workplace, especially those knowledge management systems that were the big thing 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, right. Yeah. You remember that phase. Well, anyway, this is one of the tasks on our kind of to-do list as a business for next year is we have very good technical documentation, but we need better process documentation. Mm. So,
number five on my list of team habits. Emphasize the company values over and over and over and over again. This may sound a little bit big company type of thing. And when I did work in big companies, I really hated this like shared vision type of thing. But then as soon as we were two people working, I realized that I needed a way to communicate things in my head about how I wanted things done. So I picked at first just one thing that I thought really drove how I wanted Feature Upvote to be, and that was to keep it simple. And I would just say it over and over again. And I knew I got through when the guy working with me at the time started echoing that back to me. When I would say, hey, let's do this, he'd look at it and go, keep it simple. And I knew that was an achievement. So now with our company meetings that we have once a month, we start off by sharing these values. We've actually dropped off on the keep it simple one. I need to emphasize that again. The other one is that the keep things low stress. That I want the company to continue to be a low-stress company. So that means when we're deciding what type of customer we want, when we're deciding what type of tools we want to do, what type of processes, they all have to be about things that don't create this uncontrollable stress in the company. And again, I know it's working because people are quoting those things back to me.
Yes, I agree with this. I think it's very important to have a few key mantras or mottos or values or whatever you call them. And yes, the only way to make sure everyone gets it is, you know, repeating them again and again, explicitly referring to them. You know, I think it's good that you do that at your start of your meeting or whatever. Yeah, again, at my prior company, definitely experienced this.
You can't just say them once.
No. You need to, well, two points. You need to continually repeat them. And then, of course, you have to actually live them. I mean, you know, it doesn't work if you say, okay, we're going to have a low stress company. And then, you know, you yourself are doing things to create stress. You know, you exactly. can't say one thing and live another, but yes, you do need to say them again and again. Yeah, I agree. It's a good habit.
I don't know if we would have more values. I guess there's some implicit ones that you have that kind of comes from the founder or from dominant members of the team. But those are two that I explicitly state because I think it's so important to guide the type of product we have and to keep it the way it is. That's kind of why I haven't taken on big customers. When we had a very big company that wanted to do legal agreements before they would even talk about working with us, and they were hinting that there was something big in mind. And I thought, this will cause a lot of stress, and that's not the company I want. So I actually said no to them. Which was created a stress of its own.
It's funny you mentioned that because just half an hour before we started this call, I wrote to a company that they had been introduced to us earlier in the week, and they don't really want what we do, but it's kind of related. And so I was like, you know, I had a call with the guy, and then I sent him a proposal. I was like, look, this isn't really what we do, but fine, because I want to help the guy who introduced you to me, and you know, it seems like a straightforward thing. So I sent a proposal, and then he came back, like basically making the project much more complicated, and it would have had a much bigger scope. And I was just like, look, we're not going to do this work. So here are some people I can recommend that maybe they can help you, but this is not the business we want to be in. And there's something very freeing about that.
Yeah. Not chasing every dollar.
That might be the topic for an episode in its own right. When should you say no to a customer?
So, Ed, I think that's all we have time for today. Listeners, if you'd like to discuss more about today's topics, please go to our forum at bootstrapped.fm and join the conversation. Also, finally, Christmas is upon us. This episode is likely to go live just a few days before Christmas Day. So we will be taking a break for the next couple of weeks, but don't worry, the Bootstrapped podcast will be back in early January. Look forward to seeing you after the break, Ed.
Look forward to seeing you. I hope to all the listeners out there, I hope everyone has a good break and gets charged up for a great 2020. And if anyone has tips and habits and things that they do in their business they'd like to share with us, I'd love to hear them. Have a good break.
Bye, everybody. That concludes this episode of Bootstrapped. You can discuss this episode and other bootstrapping topics on our forums at discuss.bootstrapped.fm. Until next episode, goodbye.